So I just want to finish up a few of the thoughts and ideas that I had captured. And then I want to end my portion with sort of a group activity. Hopefully we'll get one more question time in. And then the last 15 minutes leaves some time for any kind of questions or comments that people would want to make. So I think I left off, we were talking about kind of cultivating an attitude in our own life that is receptive to these invitations. And I'm going to move on. So the next heading that I had come up with was engagement. So the engagement in the transformation process, and then ultimately that leading to transformation, which oftentimes feels like a discovery. We discover what that prime material has transformed into. And that's kind of a more alchemical, for those who are familiar with that analogy, relating to that process. So we apply the observation and the heat and the questioning and the going into these events that invite us, and then that's what helps them to transform. Just like a substance in a beaker on a Bunsen burner. You heat it up, you watch what happens, and then you see what you get at the end, which in very short is a definition of alchemy, or how that relates, I think. So more in the chapter, he talks about things we can do that help to engage in the transformation. And that's really what we've been talking about. We can have conversations. We can ask deep questions and observe what's happening. And there's so many things. And one of the things I wanted to touch on is this idea of engaging things that help us. So finding helpers in the world. And primarily what I want to talk about is helpers that might emerge in the form of story, characters, figures, and how, I mentioned that a little bit, how those figures can assist us on this path. And to me, they've been a little bit like guides in uncovering what they might offer. So I want to just give an example of that. Let me think how to. So I grappled with this a little bit because I wanted to give these really lofty, intelligent-sounding examples, and there has been myths that have had a deep impact on my own personal journey. But they're long, and they're hard to explain, and they kind of have many facets, which makes them great tools for uncovering. But I'm going to go with the sillier ones. A little bit embarrassing, maybe. But I've learned, again, that judgment piece, to not be so quick to judge something I'm being drawn to. And that's sort of the invitation here. Sometimes what you're being drawn to might be the helper, and it might have some answers. This is so outside my genre of entertainment, but there was a period of time when I was in graduate school that I became somewhat obsessed with the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it was kind of perplexing, an invitation, why I wanted to come home after long hours of study and writing, and I wanted to sit down and I wanted to watch this gorgeous teenage girl run around her neighborhood at night killing vampires with knives and her brute strength and her amazing karate abilities. I did feel silly about it, but I also got really curious about it. Why was this drawing me at this time in my life? And I found so many rich connections. And sometimes it might be that you need a mirror. You want to see someone that you relate to. In the case of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think I was looking for something more compensatory. I in myself didn't feel that power as a female. It was lacking. And so I found it in her, and I loved watching it happen. And I could even use that to kind of try to cultivate some of those own, I didn't go around and kill vampires. I don't think they really exist. Metaphorically, they do exist. And I think some of being a psychotherapist is killing the metaphorical vampires. So I have all kinds of connections to her, and along at that same time, a movie became very popular, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's a hard movie to watch, and there's things about it I don't like. But again, that female figure was really resonating with me. And I wanted to add that sometimes it's a really personal thing, but in the case of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, that seemed to become a societal, cultural, a lot of people were attracted to that image. And sometimes these things are what's being called for in the culture, that as a collective, we needed a figure to see and hold on to. And in that case, I think it was a woman, you know, showing power in these really interesting ways. And I was talking with Martha Siegel yesterday, and we were talking about the Harry Potter stories. And I thought to myself, well, in a culture that is starved of the magic and the mystery, someone puts a book out there full of magic and mystery, and we just, like, devour it because we need it. And it kind of reminds us that there's this part of life that we might be neglecting. So, having said that, that's our next little discussion I want to give you time to do. And maybe there are figures that have been with you for a long time, but to talk with each other. Oh, shoot, I don't have my computer. Do you have my computer? I just want to read the question as I wrote it. So 5 minutes to share. And it might be like a story. People seem to be really into Downton Abbey. Maybe there's something about the collective story, but maybe there's a certain character. Because all these little, they're really kind of archetypal figures, but each character is so different. And it might be a certain character that you're like really interested in or find yourself thinking about a lot, or your favorite scenes include that particular character. So as specific as you can get, I think the more helpful that figure might become. So just to give you a little time to sort of engage that idea. So what has gotten your attention, either now or in the past, in film, TV, book, or story? What specific character or theme do you identify with? And that might be all you do with a partner. Just recognize it, name it, and then maybe later go and have some fun with it and see maybe why that's emerging or why it's alive. Or you might share a little bit more about that, like what you think the connection is. But try to identify a character or a story that just sort of gets your attention. Is that clear? Okay, so 5 minutes and then we'll come back. Okay, hate to cut you off again, but let's try to start bringing our attention back. All right, wind up the sharing, which is fun. What? Just start talking? Okay. We're going to wrap it up here the next 10 minutes. So, attention, what's the word? Huh? It is. Slowly quieting down and coming back to attention. I love the rich conversation. I can feel and sense all these characters in the room that you've been talking about. They want to say something. I was going to say as well that it's a particular thing that draws us, and it can sometimes be deeply personal, that connection that draws us to these characters. So I want to finish up and share a little bit about the last part of the chapter, some of the activities that he talks about. And I also, probably because I was feeling a little insecure about only sharing pop culture references, that I felt the need to also say that mythology can be deeply useful in this way. And for me, the myth of Psyche and Eros has been a guide and great comfort and helper in some of my inward journeys. And also the Odyssey. So more substantial literature, historical references, not just TV. And okay, I feel a lot better now. We should. It's all available, right? Both and. So, more lists some activities that in the book in the end of the chapter, and I'm just going to read through them. They seem to be his list of activities that bring us into this transformation. And we talked about this one last week. Keeping a daily record of dreams. It's a way to capture and collect these things that the unconscious might want to say. Talk to family members about early experiences and personalities. In some families, that's a really safe and beneficial thing to do. In other families, not so much. So that's for you to figure out. Talk to friends about your issues. Spend some quality time in nature. And I think most of us can identify with that one. It can really speak to us at a deep level if we allow it to. Walk meditatively. Resolve some troublesome relationship. That's challenging. I love this one. This is the one I kind of marked for myself. And you might look in the chapter and kind of pull out the ones that you really resonate with that really help you in this journey. This was mine. It was study your fears and longings. I liked the idea of studying them, being so curious and thoughtful. Write out your personal myth, the deep story you are living. This was actually an assignment that I had in graduate school, and it was so rich. We shared it with our fellow classmates. Incredibly creative to write your own story in a myth form, or I would add a fairy tale form. I was hoping to talk more about fairy tales, but we don't have time. But again, along with myth, fairy tales have great representation of these parts. You get your wicked stepmother and your fairy godmother, right? So it's like you get all of them together, and I love that about fairy tales. Paint or draw the scenes and characters of your inner life. So any kind of, I think, creative expression can really enliven the process. Okay, and lastly, you know, I kind of got to the end and thought, okay, then you're transformed. That's the end goal, but what does that look like, and how much time does it take? And it's not as clean and easy and simple as all these little steps, but a quote from Moore at the end of the chapter, he says that engagement in true soul work, being more thoughtful about ordinary life, creates a strong, fertile base for your spiritual efforts. And so instead of being kind of tied to a specific outcome, we create an environment that things can grow and our spiritual efforts have a more fertile ground to land in. And then I loved this part. Your glowing ideas about a spiritual existence need the bitter, salty, chaotic feelings. He's kind of mixing the two together. and writing what transformation... I was thinking through this, spending so much time on the process, I felt like it could also be a rich activity to write the ways you have transformed when you notice that things feel different in your life. And I feel like I haven't maybe spent enough time in that realm. But as you move through things, I think sometimes the transformation is a surprise. You kind of turn around and like this maybe a nagging habit that you wanted to get rid of, it's gone, but you didn't put effort toward getting rid of it. It just sort of faded off. It wasn't needed as much. And that's been my experience personally and also in work with clients too, that it kind of surprises you when somehow you feel transformed. And lastly, to bring it a little bit back to this idea of religion, I have found that one of the ways I might notice transformation is an ability to go back to the religious practices that maybe I had to move away from. And because an expansiveness has occurred within yourself, within the way you see the world, there's an ability to engage in those activities, and it's meaningful again, but it's meaningful in a new way. And it's maybe meaningful in a bigger way. And maybe the things that you took literally, you take more metaphorically. And one of the things I love about this book, an idea of a religion of one's own, is I feel like it allows for that. It allows for me to come back to a tradition and say, well, yeah, I can engage in that prayer, but I'm not thinking of it how I used to. Or I think of this as a symbolic metaphor for something that feels so alive and real in me that I can truly engage with, when before maybe I had some resistance based on opinions I had or judgments I had, which needed to be there maybe at that time. So there's a, I guess I'd say that feels like a freedom. It feels expansive, enriching. And I imagine there's other people in the room that have had similar experiences. So what I wanted to do to close, one of my favorite soul activities is music. And I thought we would sing together, hopefully, a song. And it's not really out of my tradition. I never was a part of a Catholic church, but I think I know the song comes out of the Catholic movement, the worship movement. And it's one of those things I feel like it's a song I've known since I was maybe 20. And in my tradition, we do spend a lot of time in worship with music. A lot of the non-denominational churches engage in that as a spiritual practice. So it's as I have grown with maybe the music all along, there's different times in my life where it has different meaning. So I just pulled one out that is a particular favorite. And I also like the aspect of this whole process, that there is some other larger force, power, God, whatever you want to call it, that does seem to orchestrate all of this for us, that does feel sometimes like we're being molded and we're being fashioned by hands, by divine hands, and the song speaks to that. So I wanted to offer it as just a closing of this part of our time, and then when we finish that, it's open for question and answers. I think we'll have at least about 10 minutes for that. I'd love to hear. And comments are welcome, too. So that's probably way too small to read. Yeah. I'm going to read the words, and I can also call them out probably a bit while I'm going through. The song is called Abba, Father. The words are Abba, Abba, Father. You are the potter, and we are the clay, the work of your hands. Jesus, may we be one in you as you are one in him and he is in you. Spirit, mold us and fashion us into the image of Jesus, your Son. Glory, glory and praise to you, glory and praise to you forever. Amen. Oh, yes, that's easy. Do you want me to move it forward?
Yeah.
Okay. You can put it, up. I know the words, I think. Let's hope. I don't have a strap. I'll just stay right here. Is that better? And I also might play it differently than you know. So if you want to, I can sing a couple and then follow along. I'll go through it two or maybe three times just to get that sense of corporate singing together. It goes like this. Abba, Father, you are the potter, and we are the clay, the work of your hands. Back to the top. You all sound amazing. Maybe you make it like a prayer or a meditation for any. Okay, so we're open for questions or comments, about 10 minutes, I guess, if anyone has anything.
In having a conversation with yourself by invitation, a useful tool I've found is journaling. Journaling is a lot like going to a therapist because you're putting your thoughts and your feelings out there. You're putting it on paper as opposed to telling a therapist verbally about it. And you can develop insights from your own writing. So.
Great suggestion. Thank you. So true.
I mentioned to you at the break, I have to make a confession. I'm still reading the news press. And they have a thought for a day. This was a couple days ago, and I think it was James Joyce, but I'm not sure. It says, mistakes are portals of discovery. And the other thing I ran across a couple weeks ago is a new look at something I've been hearing a lot about, which is PTSG, which is post-traumatic stress growth.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. Just and that's very much a Hillman idea, that we shift from thinking of things so much as a disorder or a pathology to rid ourselves of, and more as, if possible, an opportunity for growth, which mistakes are a huge opportunity for growth.
There's a line from Emily Dickinson that has always given me pause for thought, and I think of new ideas connected with it every time I hear it. And she simply said, leave the door of your soul ajar.
Yes. And that's precisely what Moore meant when he said soft heart, and that quote is in the chapter. Yeah. Yeah, leave your soul ajar. And what I love about the image there is that it's not wide open. We're not opening ourselves up for too much or for maybe abuses or things that aren't good for us, but ajar enough to be open but not overly exposed. I love that image. So rich. Thank you.
I once attended a Buddhist seminar of sorts, and the facilitator had us do what you do, in that we sat with one or two other people and asked ourselves, we had to do this for 5 minutes, one person on another person, saying, who are you without your story? And the person had to answer. And then you'd say, but who are you without your story? And if you do that with somebody for 5 minutes, you figure out a lot of stuff.
Well, I'm curious, what do you think, like, that you aren't much without your story? Or that you're a lot without your story?
That when you finally realize that your story is over there and here you are, that everything is open.
Right.
That's what hopefully you figure out. Yes. Some people couldn't deal with it. Some people got up and walked out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
I was wondering, he doesn't talk much about a real meditation practice. In other words, transformation through surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Keating, when he wrote his books on centering prayer, he said that it came as a total surprise, and he was totally unprepared for the stuff that came up in people when he started offering intensives, you know, a week or 2 weeks of solid meditation with some guidance, and people were going through all kinds of stuff, physical symptoms, and he ended up calling it the divine therapist at work. And they did not have to dwell necessarily what was coming up, but it was coming up. But then on the other hand, so, and I have personally experienced that. Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, then, I was reading Grace and Grit from Ken Wilber, and he was talking about the problems he and his wife at some point had, you know. And he said, I realized that meditation does not cures of our neuroses. So I'm wondering, what the hell is coming up then in meditation? And at which point are we talking cure, or is there a need for talk therapy, which on the other hand, people say talk therapy doesn't transform necessarily because pain is often embodied and talking doesn't bring it out of the body. So anyway, can you comment on that?
Well, I mean, the only thing that comes to my mind is all these modalities are tools, and every single one of them is useful. And the outcomes are often mysterious. So I think you just go through, you try different things, and people have incredible insight with deep meditation. And in terms of cure, you use the word cure. I guess I would say move away from that term. I don't know that, and is the goal really to be cured? I don't know. Sometimes we get to a place where the idiosyncratic parts of us, or maybe even the neurotic parts of us, they make life more interesting. They don't... I mean, if they're not intolerable, there's so much about who we are and who each person is as an individual. I don't know that I would want to remove all of that. So, but all those modalities just deepen. If it deepens that process, yeah, I'd say it's really valuable.
Interesting you should bring up this question of curing versus something else. There's a line in the Moore book on page 97 that says, I see therapy as a method for getting through life's problems rather than trying to make them disappear. And this, of course, reminds me of you were pointing out that sometimes things just seem to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be a librarian, and I had library colleagues, and we made up a Christmas carol that had these lines in it. God bless ye, good librarians, let nothing ye dismay. Remember, by ignoring it, the problem goes away.
Nice, yes. Very nice, thank you. Yeah, and I love that more idea, getting through it. There's definitely a season for, there's times when we have to ignore things. I guess in Jungian terms, repressing things, they don't go away. I feel like they just emerge in other ways, you know. Sometimes not the most, the best maybe ways, but you have to be gentle. And I mean, I when even preparing for this, like I felt I'm still in process. We're all still in process. It's just exploring what it looks like and going deeper in the patterns. Because doing the psychotherapy work, that's, I feel like I don't really know anything about, but you start to have a familiarity with the patterns and the way that these things tend to go, and then you just follow that and stay curious and see if something else happens. And so,
hi, I'm Gloria.
Hi.
I was talking to you briefly about the difference. I know there's a difference, but between opinions and projections. And I thought during this new year with the upcoming elections, we get to see a lot of characters, cast of characters, and it's a great time to look at your values, your opinions, and your projections. Mm-hmm. And I know, I can remember past elections, and I was at a contemplative meeting, and when they had intermission, everybody went crazy into the, not crazy, but noisy, into their opinions, and I'm like, I can't even go here, not here, but well, I hope not, where people don't have an opinion, and yours is not the right one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping we can stay calm and have projections and look at them. I'm certainly going to. Donald Trump is going to be wonderful to look
material,
at.
Material, an invitation.
It is.
Invitation.
And I thought, you know, he makes these faces, and I thought, yeah, maybe I do that too. So, and that's why he's annoying, that
right.
Part. So I thought... So that this is going to be good therapy for all of us,
yeah.
Maybe.
Nice. Yes. Yes. The invitations are present. And one thing I talked with Gloria about at the break about projections, because there are differences. There's opinions. There's values, and projections can be really hard to discern and kind of pull apart. And but my suggestion to her was, you go with the ones that have the most charge, and oftentimes the ones that you don't know why the irritation or the rub is there or the obsession with the person, and you start to try to explore from that way. There's a couple. I'm sure they're out there in the world somewhere. I have a couple things that kind of take you step by step in working a projection that are really helpful. I could try to find and offer to the group for that purpose. And also, I didn't mention there's positive projections, and those are more fun because you might be attaching onto something you're seeing in someone else that's actually a really beautiful quality that you embody that you're not aware of. And so sometimes that's where the kind of obsession or charge is with that person. And so as you unpack that, you can kind of take that back and own it and appreciate it and enjoy it that you have that. It wasn't just about that person. It was also about yourself. So there's both. It's not just negative. Any other questions? Maybe one more, if anyone has a burning desire to comment or question. Thank you so much. I so enjoyed this. I really appreciate this group.